And welcome, everybody, to The Sports Rivals. I'm Gary Thorne, delighted to have you with us. Two great guests today. Our purpose here is to preserve memories of classic sports rivalries through the words of those who participated in them. And these are the rivalries that are described from the inside out. Two of the game's all-time great pitchers in Major League Baseball history are with us today, Jim Palmer and Dennis Eckersley. For Jim, he pitched for the Baltimore Orioles and only the Orioles for 19 years, 1965 through 1984, entered the Hall of Fame in 1990. He was one of the game's great pitchers, as exemplified by the three Cy Young Awards that he won, and the fact that over his career, an amazing number, that eight times, he was a 20-game winner. It took him to the World Series six times and came away with three World Series rings. Dennis Eckersley has one of the most unusual careers as a pitcher. He, too, is in the Hall of Fame, elected in 2004. Eck pitched from 1975 through 1997. The amazing part of it, not only the success he had, but that he did it as both a starter and a closer. He was a starter with the Red Sox, the Cubs, and Cleveland, then went over to Oakland, and there was converted into one of the game's great closers. Dennis Eckersley, in the 1992 year as a closer with Oakland, went 7-1, had 51 saves, and was the American League Cy Young Award winner and MVP. For the Eck, control. Goose Gossage said of him, he could hit a gnat in the butt with a pitch if he wanted to. And probably for Eck, that is true. So we are delighted to have Jim Palmer, Dennis Eckersley with us. Yes, they did face one another at the major league level. They're going to tell us about that and a lot more. Guys, let me begin. I'll start with you, Eck, but both can respond to it. When, Eck, did you first become aware of Jim Palmer as an opposing pitcher?
Wow. You know, when I broke in in 75, I believe Jim won the Cy Young that year of the three. That was the year. And what I remember of that year, it was a big deal. You know, Topps cards, you know, baseball cards, they used to have the top three, you know, pitchers in the ERA and wins and whatever. And it would come out every year. And I was lucky enough that year to be, this is what I remember so well, 75. Jim led the league with a 2.0 something, and then Catfish Hunter was second, and I was third. So I was lucky enough to get on that card, and I was a rookie, and I will never forget it because, you know, I held Jim in such high esteem, to say the least. And this guy was the guy. You know, he was the guy. He was the best pitcher in the game for several years, that being one of them. I think Catfish came in second that year, didn't he, in Cy Young, I believe.
Yeah, his first year with the Yankees. And, yeah. You know, I was, I think, 22-11. He was 22-13. My ERA, I think, was 2.09.
See?
I had a few more shutouts. He had maybe a few more complete games. I think I had 25. He might have had 28. I know those are kind of I mean, people don't even know what a complete game is now. I mean, what do we get, about 9 or 11 a year collectively? But I want to take you because, you know, we're supposed to be rivals. And you know, Gary said, you guys know what your record was against each other. And you know, you remember a game, we'll get to that. And I remember another game when I was trying to win 20, I think, for the seventh out of 8 years in Cleveland late in the season. But I want to take you back to probably the winter of 1975 when we went to a dinner in Erie, I think it was Erie, Pennsylvania. Yeah. And Bob Prince, who was the, you know, I don't know if he's in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but he was the renowned announcer for the Pirates. And he was the MC. And they were having a winner's thaw. And so, you know, I mean, we probably paid us $300 or $400 to go. It must probably was after your first year with the Indians where you won 13 games. I mean, you had a great rookie year, low ERA, I think it was about 260 somewhere like that. And we all knew you had great stuff. And you kind of looked like an Oakland A because you had the mustache and, you know, the long hair and, you know, and you won. So that's what the A's did. But what I remember about the dinner is, first of all, the spring thaw. So when Bob Prince was coming to the dinner, apparently when the car got off the highway, it went into a wall of water and the car stopped. He had to get out of the car with his tuxedo on. He took his Gucci loafers off, held them up, and when he came to the rostrum, he had a water line a little bit higher than his cummerbund. And he puts his Gucci loafers on the top of the rostrum, and he says, okay, I'm a little damp, but I'm ready to go. And what I remember is that this was the first time I ever met Dennis Eckersley. Every time I really saw you in person. Yeah. You know, I'd seen you pitch. You know, I knew you were a great pitcher. But, you know, I think if anybody that's a, you know, Red Sox fan or even a baseball fan, then they get to see you broadcast, you have an unusual vocabulary. And my question, coming from Northern California, what was the genesis of this? I mean, where did this all come from? Because when I was out of the, you know, I was up on the dais and I'm listening to you talk and I'm looking down the dais and I'm going, what is this young man? Because you're like, you're 65, right. I'm 64. I go, what is he talking about? So, you know, you cheesed him. You had all these different particular things. So what was it? Really was the genesis, the derivation of where this all came from.
You know, some, I go back to that. I remember meeting you the first time that place we talked about, wherever that was that we met. And my memory of it was, you know, I was over my skis. I was green as can be, right? Because I was a rookie and you are the man, right? So I think I might've seen you in the bar before we had the event. I forget. And, you know, you were styling and you were, you know, Mr. Perfect, looking good.
Oh, self-dust.
Oh, yeah. And so I was sort of like, you know, and then when we went up to the podium, had the talk, it had nothing to do with my language back then. You know, I was just like humming. I didn't have my act together, you know, the way that you did. So I just felt so out of place back then. You know, we've come so far, you're thinking about that, you know, over 45 years ago. And, you know, the kind of relationship we have now. But if you go back to that time, I was in awe, man. I was just a kid, you know. And you know, I think that my verbiage hasn't got much better since then.
I think anybody listens to the, you know, Nesson and listens to you, you know that, you know, you're not exactly kind of a, you know, close to the vest guy. You kind of say what you think, which is, I think, what is so refreshing.
Yeah, but you know, there's so much jargon in this game that I've gotten over all the years, and the guy that I got it from is your guy that pitched with you, won 20 games, Pat Dobson. That's where it all came from. You know, Dobson.
Oh, that's where it did. Yeah. Well, totally. That was one of the 420 game winners in '71. I think it's the only time it's happened in modern history with Mike Cuellar. Dave McNally and myself. In fact, I was the last in Cleveland, you know, where you started your career. I was the last guy to do it. And boy, it was a nothing game to the seventh inning. And I'm going, you know, I'm the only, I mean, 19 wins is not bad, but when you're used to winning 20 and the other three guys on your staff's already done it, I'm going, I better win. As it turned out, I think I pitched against Alan Foster that day. We won 3-0, but I was desperate. I mean, I'm diving into bases. I mean, I'm doing all kinds of stuff just, you know, because it's before the designated hitter. So Dauber gave you a lot of the, the high cheese and all.
Yeah, but you know, some beyond Dauber, it has to go to Jim Palmer. Think about Jim Palmer at pitchers at that time. Jim Palmer is the reason why pitchers didn't wear hats. When you came into Baltimore, or they came to you, you go look out the outfield during batting practice, and he didn't have a hat on, and all the other guys followed suit, whether it was Flanny or Martinez, or any, they didn't wear hats. And I never wanted to wear a hat either, so that just sort of gave me the opportunity to not wear one. I mean, it was.
Well, did you have a hat rule?
I don't know. We had a lot of rules, you know, stirrups and all that stuff. But it was still cool because I never wanted to wear a hat anyway. So,
well, you know, Earl Weaver's rule.
What was that?
Want to be on the club, win. And I don't care what you look like. We'll kind of fast forward to the next year, because one of the great games that I ever saw pitched in Memorial Stadium was a game you pitched against the Orioles in 1976. And what I remember is that it was first year and the only year that Reggie Jackson played for us. You know, he showed up. We traded Mike Torres and Don Baylor at the end of spring training for Kenny Holtzman. He came right away, and Reggie held out for about 5 weeks. He could have signed, I think, 150, 175, 200, 225, 250, and $50,000 for his dad up in Philadelphia. And the Orioles just did not have the foresight to know what free agent was going to be. He would go to New York, $400,000 a year. He could have been Mr. October wearing an Oriole uniform, which would have even gotten me into more World Series. But you pitched a game, and Reggie's girlfriend was in town, and he had a black Porsche with MV73 license plate. And they wouldn't let her in the parking lot because she didn't have a parking pass. So after the game, where you just blew him away, I think he hit a roller to the fourth time up. He finally made contact after punching out the first three times. Somebody said, well, actually, it was really special. He said, well, you know, they wouldn't let my girlfriend in the parking lot. And, you know, therefore, I wasn't really trying and all that. But I mean, one of the great games I ever saw pitched was you just, you know, and, you know, Reggie, Hall of Famer with, what, 564 home runs. I mean, a bunch of home runs. You just made him look silly. But you know, Dauber, you know, going back to Dauber, he was your teammate. I think he won 16 games one of the years.
Yeah, he did.
Another one of your teammates was Gaylord Perry.
Yes.
Was it?
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. You know, I know Steve Stone. When Steve Stone played for the Orioles in 79, he won 11 games. Next year, he won 25 games, was the Cy Young Award winner in 1980. So he had come up with the Giants, and I said, well, did you ever ask Gaylord about throwing a spitter? He goes, yeah, kid, you got $10,000. So my question to you is, it's always nice to have an extra pitch if you can.
Yes.
Did you ever ask Gaylord about maybe throwing a spitter?
I do something I did not. You know, Gaylord.
Hey, you're a smart guy. Come on. Yeah, you're a smart guy.
Gaylord was in his own zone then. You know, if you remember right, Frank Robinson was a manager, 75, first black manager, the whole thing. So I was a part of that. And I was in the bullpen at the beginning. So Frank and Gaylord didn't get along. Remember, Gaylord said, I want to make $1 more than Frank. And Frank was a, you know, player manager anyway. So they didn't get along to begin with. So
because of the dollar, I mean, I know Frank.
I don't know about the dollar, but the fact is I finally got a chance to start. But that was a game about in May. So I was in the bullpen for quite a while. Anyway, fast forward. I go on a roll, and I shut out the A's. At that time, the A's were great, 75. So we get on the plane afterwards, right? And I'm 3-0 with a 0-5. I'm styling, right? And Frank comes up to me on the plane, gives me a ball, said, sign this, Rook, for the stewardess or whatever it was. And I signed it, and I put the ace with parentheses and gave it back to Robbie. And Robbie goes, Gaylord, look, the kid says he's the ace, you know? Yeah, it was classic.
Well, no wonder,
you know, personified right then.
But no wonder he didn't teach you how to throw a spitter.
Yeah, I don't think he liked me.
Why? Because you were good?
No, but he got traded about a month later, so it was a beautiful thing.
Well, I'm going to ask you one question. You know, I mean, you know, you went on. I mean, Gary talked about it earlier. I mean, 390 saves and 197 wins. I think about 190 or whatever as a starting pitcher. I mean, probably the best combination.
100 and a half. Yeah.
Okay. So, still not bad. But when I went to spring training, when, you know, you started when you were 17 playing, I think, in Reno. I started in 18. I played for Cal Ripken's dad up in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And that spring, you know, a guy drops a fly ball during one of the games and the pitcher's yelling at the left fielder, you know, because he's trying to make the club. And, you know, at lunch that day, they'd go, you know, wear so-and-so. We don't wear our emotions on our sleeves. We don't yell at our defensive players and whatever. You're about as good a guy that I've ever met. But when you were on the mound, you had a different persona. You did not ascribe to the I don't wear my emotions on my sleeve. And I don't mean it's a bad thing because obviously, I mean, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer and all that. But and then we were talking probably, I guess, last winter or something like that. I said, you know, I was watching one of the World Series games. And then, you know, you get a save and then you come in and your mannerisms. You know, I always accuse you of pointing at people and you say you only did it a couple of times. But then all of a sudden they interview after the game and you're the most calm and collect guy and all that. So what actually went on when you were pitching? Because as you said, I mean, I always said, hey, never let anybody know what you're feeling.
Yeah.
You know, a guy hits a home run, not a grand slam because I never threw one of those, but, you know, a 3-run home run, you're not really happy, but take a deep breath. You're not a deep breath type of guy. It didn't at least, or it didn't appear.
Well, you know, it was difficult to control, you know, because I really am an emotional guy. And then I got demonstrative and to me, it's not really who I was, but you know how a lot of guys are just not the same. Once you cross the line, it's a different story. And And it worked for me, Jim. You know what I mean? It just sort of worked for me. And I'm not, I've got kind of defensive about it a little bit because I, you know, because you saw, you know, if you know me, it's not really me, you know? But, you know, you got to live with how you acted on the mound. And, you know, like I said, it really wasn't who I was. People hide behind it. It's a confidence thing. You don't want to let people know what you're really feeling, you know? So there's a little fear behind it, you know? And like I said, it worked for me. It's part of my whole persona.
Yeah. I think a lot of people say, I think most professional athletes have the fear of failing.
Yeah.
Well, nobody fail. I mean, you're failing in front of people. People are commentating, especially if it's a World Series, on your failure or your success. I mean, there's both sides of that coin. But I it's just kind of the way that, you know, we were taught in the Orioles organization, and I'm not meaning it's a negative, but, you know, the one thing I always kind of wondered about, because I got 4 saves, you had 390. I mean, that's it in my career. I mean, I got one when I was a rookie where I pitched the last 4 innings, so I got a save in 1965 when I was kind of a spot starter. Earl Weaver brought me in after the All-Star game to face Sal Bando with the bases loaded, and then had the nerve. I was just warming up for my next start. Next thing I know, I'm in the game. He had the nerve to tell me the bases were loaded. Like, I didn't know that with, you know, one out in the 9th inning. And I, you know, he had a double play ball. I mean, kind of not a screaming line drive, but a nice skidding one hopper for a double play. What motivated you as a closer? I mean, you know, I've heard people say it's faith or it's fear or is it competence or the fact that, you know, your team's got a lead after 8 games. What was it for you?
Well, first of all, I went back to that again. You have to convey confidence. And, you know, that's part of it. But there's a fear base, you know, the fact that you could give it up. Hello, Kurt Gibson. I mean, it's hot. That's a hot position to be in. And, you know, I've eaten crow galore. Believe me, I've blown a lot of saves and a lot of big ones, and it hurts. And so, you know, you get that big save and it's fleeting. You know, you walk off the field and yahoo, you better enjoy it because tomorrow's another one, you know? So maybe you're over the top sometimes, but if you were feeling what I was feeling, not everybody's the same. We're not all robots. When you're feeling it, man, I show it, you know? And guys take it the wrong way sometimes. Get over yourself. You know what I'm saying? Dwight Evans used to get pissed at me all the time. I said, don't flatter yourself, pal. You're just another out. It just happened to be a big one. You know?
This is when you won 20 games with the Red Sox, or when your teammate, or when you were getting them out?
When I was getting them out, because he was pissed at me all the time. Yeah.
Let me get you back to something at the beginning, please, because you both started on the matchups. And Jim said he had a story, and I think Dennis did too, about match pitching against one another. Can you take us back there?
Let me do my side, and you can do yours, because I know where you're going.
It was a meaningless game.
For me, but maybe more for you. But this is the end of the season of 77, right? I believe at the time I might have been 13-12, whatever it was, and you had a lot more wins, trying to get your 20 wins again just to stay in shape. And I happened to match up with you, and we had a nice game going on, 1-1, right, going into the 8th, I believe. 1-1 going to the 8th, bottom of the 8th. We get the base. Now, this whole story is based on the fact that Jim has never given up a grand slam. Hello, okay? We got the bases drunk, bottom of the 8th. Rico Cardi's the hitter.
Oh, well, no, let's go through the whole line.
You want to?
You know, bases loaded.
Yeah.
Now, I only have 2 more starts. I have this start, and, you know, you've already struck out about 12. I think I had 3 strikeouts. I hadn't pointed my finger at anybody.
I pointed 12 times.
You were dealing. You were dealing. And I think there's a Paul Day might hit a single. There's a bunt. The sensei falls down. Another bunt. I fall down because the field in Cleveland was not the best. They had already played football on it. Now the bases are loaded. We got Bruce Bakke coming up, who had hit, 300, 4 years in a row. Somehow, and I'm thinking, and then Andre Thornton, and then Rico Cardi, who 2 years earlier had hit 366 and won the National League batting title. And I'm thinking, number one, how am I going to get out of this?
Without giving up a slam.
Well, no, I just wanted to know how I was going to get out of this without giving up a run. Because right. You were, I mean, like I said, you had outpitched me to that point, even though it was 1-1. So Bakke swings at like the fifth high fastball, 2-2. He strikes out. Throw a fastball up and into Thornton. He pops it up. And I go, ooh, this might be really good. So Rico Cardi comes to the plate. Now, Rico used to talk to you. He used to talk to hitters, you know, you kind of give them the gestures and all that. But Rico used to have a big smile on his face, and that kind of unnerved me because I wondered why does a hitter come up to the plate facing me with a big smile on his face? He must know something that I don't know. And earlier in the year, I'd thrown him a low and away slider in a game. I think I won 4-1, 5-1, and he hit it about 430 feet to right center field for a home run. So now I get two outs, bases loaded, 1-1 game. I'm going, what am I going to do? I'm not throwing him a slider because I learned my lesson, right? So I throw him a high fastball, and he takes it. And I go, he always swings at that pitch. Ball one. Take a deep breath, throw him another high fastball. He takes that pitch. Now it's 2-0. Now I'm going, uh-oh. Now I'm going to let you go right from there. It's 2-0. You got to be thinking, uh-oh. You know, you're on the bench thinking, Cardi, I mean, something good's going to happen.
I said, this lucky bastard's going to get out of this bases loaded jam is what I'm thinking, right? Here he goes again, throws that high cheese, and somebody's going to pop this shit up, right? Meanwhile, Rico crushes it, left center field.
Right.
Bumbrey, I said, Bumbrey?
Yeah.
But Bumbrey's there, goes to the fence, at the fence, leaps, snatches this ball over the fence. I am on the top step saying, get out of here. Slam it, John. And he catches it. He catches it. Branch work for Palmer, and he comes off the field.
And then what happens?
Then I go out and give up two back-to-backs to Eddie and Singleton.
And added it in.
And then I get the L.
Yeah.
And you're happy as can be. Happy once again. The great Tim Palmer wins again, and I'm the lamb, and I got to go to the house. The next day, he comes to the field during batting practice, walks over to me.
We're running in the outfield.
Yeah, and he comes over to me. Not granted, I just lost, right? And he comes over to me and says, hey, I just want to give you some advice, kid, right? Like, okay, no. Dad. He said, don't be pointing at these guys when you punch them out. Because they wanted to give you your lunch. They don't play this, you know? And I said, you got it. And I said, thank you very much. And we went about our day.
Yeah, but were you rooting for me when I went 11 innings on the last day of the season to win my 20th? Or were you still a little bit aggravated that the fact that you had outpitched me and I somehow, you know, miracle on 33rd Street, which is kind of where the Orioles played?
I'll tell you what, back then, I may have carried myself like I was the man, but I really wasn't. You know what I mean? I really wasn't.
So now let's go back to, so let's tell your story about, you know, about the home run that was rained out.
Oh, yeah. I don't have fond memories of that. I think Yaz hit a 3-run home run off you in the second or third inning, and it was raining like hell, and then they called it. Once again, I can't beat the guy, right? We didn't really face each other all that much, though, really, right?
Well, Gary asked us, you know, I can remember maybe pitching against Catfish. He had me beat 2-0. Ken Harrelson had a home run, and Frank had a 3-run home run with two outs in the ninth inning. I won that game 3-2. You know, Nolan maybe a couple of times. Gaylord, you know, Fergie. I might have beat him 1-0 opening day. He beat me 2-1 in Texas when he was with the Red Sox 1 year. You know, a lot of times, you know, I think the one common denominator when you pitch against guys like you when you were starting, or Gaylord or Nolan, or, you know, I mean, if you're in the National League, Carlton or Fergie when he came to the American League, is that you know you can't pitch poorly. When, I mean, you better be on, you better have your A game, or, you know, you're not going to luck out. You're not going to get one of those 5 1/3 innings. And, you know, Eckersley gave up 7 runs and you somehow got 5 1/3 innings, 16 outs, and you're going to get a win. Wasn't going to work that way.
You know, I tell you what, you always pitch your best games against, when I go look back at some of the games I pitched against great pitchers. You know, I did lucky enough to throw a no-hitter once, Frank Tanana. I beat him 1-0. That's when he was Frank Tanana, remember, back in the mid-70s. He could throw
95, 96.
Yeah. But you know something, Jim, when I look back, and I'm not trying to be humble or anything, is I couldn't hold anybody, you know, your jock, I mean, what you did, and a jockey, that's kind of funny. I couldn't hold your jockey. But, I mean, you were in a league of your own, Jim. I mean, you know what I mean? And you go, you're sort of sensitive to the thing that you didn't punch guys out, right? I think that gets in your craw a little bit, you know? But you're probably one of the, I mean, I'm not trying to blow your horn here, but you're probably one of the greatest five pitchers that ever pitched in this game. So it's hard for me to even compare myself to you talking about starting pitching back in the day, because you were one of a kind, without a doubt. And that goes, you know, a lot of people don't remember, you know, how great that you really were. You see what's happening.
Well, I've been on really good teams and a lot of great staffs. You know, I had Robin Roberts when I was 19. He was twice my age. You know, he had about 270 wins. He told me about fastball command. You know, you got a great fastball. Hope you understand that. Curveball, you can throw for a ball. One, you can throw for a strike. Maybe a third pitch. Did you have a guy that, when you were coming up, that, you know, maybe was your mentor, you know, as far as pitching? And I know it wasn't Frank Robinson, because, you know, Frank was a hitter.
Yeah, he hated pitchers, didn't he? He hated pitchers. But I tell you what, I got a lot from Robbie, because – I blamed my act on the mound to Robbie, because Robbie had a chip on his shoulder to beat the band. I mean, didn't he? I mean, Robbie, that's why he was great beyond great. And I think all good players should find a chip. I know some guys got bigger chips than others, but, you know, there's always something to prove. You know, you feel like, you know, somebody doesn't think I'm that good. And you know, yelling at umpires like Frank used to do. Everybody was screwing Frank, weren't they? I mean, he was an angry man.
Well, you know where he got that from, Earl.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were Earl wouldn't wear his glasses, so he couldn't really see what was going on. But if the scoreboard, he'd say, "What's the score?" And somebody would say, "Well, they're ahead," and he would get a little bit upset.
Yeah.
And then you'd get thrown out or something like that.
But I'm sure you talked about Robin Roberts. For me, there wasn't anybody in particular, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? I wish I had one guy. You know, I had Dave Duncan late in my career, but that was way after the fact, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could certainly – the Indians, when you first came to them, when you were, what, 20? You know, yeah. I got to the Orioles when I was – you were there 20. You didn't have bad players, but, you know, I was on a team that was winning 94 games and 109, 108, 101. Yeah, things were – I played on a better ball club. Probably better.
Yeah, you're right.
Too.
Yeah, I took to get to the Red Sox to get me some runs. You know what I'm saying?
You told me once you learned, you know, I used to go to Fenway, and you talked about fear motivating you as a closer. Fear motivated me when I went to Fenway Park, because, you know, you always felt like the wall was brushing the back of your rear end, because, you know, the Green Monster was so close. But you told me you had Freddie Lynn in center. You had you had Dwight Evans in right field with his, what, 8 or 9 gold gloves, and you learned how to pitch the lefties using your changeup and using the bigger part of the ballpark.
Yeah, you know something, Jim? You know, when I look back, I was a two-pitch pitcher, you know, and just change speeds on my breaking ball and try to sink my fastball, and then I used to think I had high cheese. I thought I could bring it. You know what I mean? I got probably the biggest problems in my career, and it never stopped. Because I was always a velocity guy. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, God, if I felt like I was bringing it. And I thought, man, when I was younger, I was throwing 95. Who knows how fast you threw, really? But I don't know. I was always a velocity guy. And I wish I had learned earlier that, you know, and then I could paint a little bit, too.
A little?
Yeah.
I mean, I look back at your numbers, you know, your first year in the minor leagues. I mean, I walked 130 and 129 innings, went to instructional league, and then worked on my windup. And next year I was in the big leagues because I kind of had to stay there. Only your first year, you had almost maybe, I think, a walk every 2 innings.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, your control with maybe one backdoor slider that didn't quite get to where you wanted it to be was impeccable. Yeah, just one. Which it happened to be in game 1 of the 88 World Series. You know, it's funny about that game. You know, I mean, you've owned that about as well as anybody. But, you know, people always say, well, what was your most and this is kind of interesting because you were on this team. The 77 All-Star game is like 102 degrees in Yankee Stadium. And, you know, we are wearing the white shoes and all that. you know, Yaz is playing center because we don't, you know, I think whoever's playing the center fielder is hurt with, and he's got a sprained ankle. Not that it mattered because the way I pitch. But Bob Fish, who was Lee McPhail, who was president of the American League, said, you know, can't have what happened last year. I said, what's that? He said, you need to be ready to pitch it at, by 8:15, 8:20. So Jeff Torborg warmed me up. I didn't have great stuff. I already had about 185 innings at the All-Star break. So, you know, that's the, kind of what we did back then. And so I come in, I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting there. The game starts at 8:45. Joe Morgan, who got into the Hall of Fame the year I did, you know, MVP twice, I go 3-2 on him, and I said, if I walk him, he's going to steal second. If he feels good, which is an All-Star game, throw him. You know, I don't have – again, I didn't have good stuff. And when you have a tendency of not having good stuff, you overthrow, especially in an All-Star game. Throw a backup slider to Luzinski. He check swings it into the right field seats. It's 2-0. Now, and then in this second inning, I hang a real – you know, like the room service slider. And Garvey hits it into the bullpen. So it's 4-0. And Billy Martin finally comes out, and I said, Billy – Where have you been? He goes, well, I didn't want to embarrass you. And I said, Billy, leaving me out here has embarrassed me. But I have a question. You were on that team. And where were you when I needed you?
You know, something, that was one of the most nervous I've ever been. This is the 77 All-Star game at Yankee Stadium. Okay. I'm 22 years old. I think I would, you know, had talked to you before the game. But the day before when we got to practice, Billy Martin was the manager, and Billy told me, this is when they tell you, hey, Eck, you got the second three innings. We should go three innings. Remember our starter? You follow Palmer. I had to go home. I said, oh, my God, I got to pitch the second three innings.
That I made you look pretty good, though, didn't I?
Yeah, and then you got your lunch in the first inning, and Kearney had to get warmed up. Jim Kern, I remember. But, you know, well, that's how –
yeah,
that's how proud Jim Palmer is. He has a bad outing, one outing, you know, and it stays with him 50 years later, right?
Well, you know why? Well, okay, because that following the game of the week, I pitch against Gaylord.
Okay.
So I go 11 innings, nothing to nothing. He pitches the first nine. Nobody, it's game of the week on NBC, so somebody sees it. But not as many people as saw me throw the three home runs in the All-Star game. And the irony is I had never given up a run in an All-Star game. I had pitched against Seaver in 70, you know, three scoreless innings. Started the game in Atlanta when Gaylord said to Mickey Lolich and myself, because we were going to pitch the bulk of the game, he said, you know, somebody's going to have to let Hank Aaron hit a home run. I said, Gaylord, he's got 697 home runs. You don't have to let him hit home runs. He hit a home run off Gaylord in that game. Not that he let him. It was a jam shot, but that was Hank Aaron. And then, I pitched in the game in Detroit when all the Hall of Famers hit the home run and Reggie hit it up on the transformer. I relieved by the blue. I never gave up a run. Must have been Billy Martin. I'm blaming it on Billy.
I'll tell you what, you know, Jim, you know, the kind of career you had, you can't look back at that many bad games, but – you know, when it's over, said, and done, you know, this is a very humbling experience. You know, not even though you're a Hall of Famer. I mean, I gave up a lot of big home runs, you know, whether it's a Kurt Gibson one, Alomar, we don't want to get into it. But anyway, when it's over, said, and done, I've given up over 350 jacks now. So I have swallowed a lot. You know what I mean? So when I start pointing at people, you know, it's okay. They got me. I get them. That's it. Right? Seriously.
Well, you're right. Some of us just did it in a little manner. Again, I'm not being judgmental. I mean, I'd love to see you deal. It's great. I wanted to get the guys out, but I didn't want to embarrass them. Even though I think that if guys trotted around the bases and pointed and did all the stuff they do now, I had 34 guys in almost 4,000 innings, 3,948
nothing.
Innings.
Yeah.
That number would have gone up a little bit.
Yeah.
You can't have guys pointing and gesturing and doing all that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, you don't try to hurt him. You just hit him in the kneecap. And, you know, and there's an accident.
Yeah.
Let me ask both of you this. This is from a fan, and that's me. Jim, when Eck was put in the bullpen, when Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan decided that he was going to become a closer, what did you think about that? As a pitcher,
well, you know, I mean, You know, it's funny, if you look at the numbers, I was kind of wondering, you know, because you get traded to the Cubs, you had a couple of good years, and the year before, what it was, I think 86, you're 6-11 with a very high ERA. You know, because when you went to the National League from the Red Sox, you know, most of the guys that I've talked to said it's easier to pitch in the National League because you don't have a DH and you so on and so on, and you can sequence your way through hitters, and you certainly know how to do that. But, you know, I figured you must have had a sore arm when you were 6-11 with the Cubs, or if something was going on. And then you go to, you know, Gary, I mean, I and that could explain this, because I'm kind of wondering, when you take a starting pitcher, I think you were like maybe 29. You weren't, you know, it's not like you were 34 or 5. You're 29 years old. All of a sudden, you know, you've already pitched a no-hitter. You already won 20 games as a starter, and you go to a good team. But you get a manager who's in the Hall of Fame, or ends up in the Hall of Fame, that is known for his communication. How did it all go down? I mean, I just figured, well, maybe Tony La Russa knows what he's, you know, what he's thinking, you know, what he's doing. Because if you look back, I mean, what, at like 2,700 wins as a manager, Tony was a pretty good manager. I'm kind of wondering what he told you and how you bought into that.
I'll tell you, Jim, dumb luck, really. It's timing. Life is timing. You know, who knows where you're going to be at that time? My life was changing, you know, alcoholism, the whole thing, got sober. So we all got lucky, me the most. And, you know, what I'm, you know, impressed about with pitchers that can throw 4,000 innings, I ran out of gas, Jim. You know, when I was with the Cubs that last year, I had nothing. And I got knocked around. And then I was throwing salad, man. I had no gas. I had nothing. I had no gas. And I, hooray for paint, man. You got to throw strikes and they're going to get you. But anyway, I got sober that offseason, came to Oakland on the ground floor of that team that was, who knew that team was going to turn into a great team, right? Canseco, McGuire, what have you. Bob Welch, Dave Stewart, whatever. So I was right place, right time, dumb luck. Tony gets me, says, and they had a tired rotation at the time. And he said, no, you go to the bullpen. And I was like, all right. But I accepted it, you know, and I went, and that's probably the biggest part of it. And I could always throw strikes. My arm came back. You know what I mean? 1, 2, 3 innings, whatever it is. And it came back.
And what, did you go on a different program? Did you?
Yeah, I was doing more, you know, because I got my arm back, you know, doing all those weights, you know, those little teeny things we used to do. And then not only that, my mentality was go after people, right? I mean, let's go, throw strikes, you know? And I don't know. It was just, it was the right place, right time. And it was the grace of God, the whole thing, the whole shooting match. But, and then here we are all these years later, Tony La Russa is like my, you know, brother. It's like family and it's history, all that, you know?
I mean, well, how did it feel like 48 saves, 51 saves? I mean, you made a point earlier. When I won 20 games 8 out of 9 years, they always took it away. When the season started, you know, the 48 saves are gone. The 22 wins, 23 wins, 21 wins, 20 wins are gone. And you got to start all over. I mean, when you have to pitch, I don't know. I mean, what was the most saves you ever had in a week?
I don't know, probably 4. You know, but the thing about it, you think about it, you're not – those guys going 2-3 innings, whether it's Fingers or Gossage or Suter and all that, somebody's got what Goose, I mean, to last as long as he did. You remember Dick Raddatz? Remember, he only lasted what, half a dozen years, right? I mean, you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Bill Campbell that did it. Remember Bob Stanley? They threw a lot of innings. You can't be a guy with gas going out there trying to feature gas 3-4 times a week and going 2 or 3 innings. It's not going to happen. So that played into why. That one inning thing is where I got my success.
Well, plus, you know, as a control artist, I mean, you know, not that you didn't have good stuff. I bet you probably threw 13 to 14 pitches an inning.
There you go.
Where the major league average is probably more like 6-17. So you can do it in back-to-back nights and so on and so on.
Yeah. And Jim, I'm telling you, it was like magic. Here I come. It was like, here he comes, Mighty Mouse. Here I come to save the day. And I just go out there and it goes, boom, 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 boom. Let's get the hell out of here. It's unbelievable. It was magic. It was magic.
God, you guys, you've eaten up the clock again here, as I knew you would. I could go on forever listening to you talk. I'll just tell
people. We just got to We got to get Eckel a little more energy.
We got to give him more energy. See, he hasn't lost any of it. It's all still there. Yeah.
We haven't done a game in about a year. You know what I'm saying? I'm chomping at the bit over here. Right?
I hear you.
Yeah. Seriously.
Thanks, you guys. It's just magnificent. We really appreciate the fact that you've done this and given folks what will be a real treat to hear these stories from the both of you. Jim Palmer, Dennis Eckersley, two Hall of Fame pitchers, and I'll just say so fans know, two very great friends at this point in time. That's going to conclude this chapter of the Sports Rivals. You can learn more about us, other episodes, logging on to thesportsrivals.com. We invite you to join the conversation with questions, suggestions for any future shows, guys you'd like to hear. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at thesportsrivals, Twitter at rivals_podcast, and on Facebook by searching for The Sports Rivals Podcast. Dennis and Jim, our great appreciation, and all of you for listening. Thanks very much, and bear in mind, it is the rivalries that make the games.